Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, April 8th, 2024. I'm your host, Magnus Teeble. With me today is...
It's Peter R.H.
Peter R.H. is here. Yeah. We got a bunch of good stuff lined up for you today on the program. Today we're starting a brand new regular segment on the show called Gardening with Embark. I'll talk a bit more about that when we get to that segment. But we'll be doing a weekly segment on what you need to be doing in your garden to get the most out of it with Embark. What are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
Well, I'm going to talk about the American Revolution and all the cliches over the years that came forth from it, mm-hmm. and maybe analyze it in some other perspective. And one thing that's interesting is that George Washington, in December of 1776, he asked Congress to have a draft. I mean, they hadn't won the war yet. This is the propaganda of 1776. That's the Declaration of Independence. They really don't win the war until 1883, when the final peace treaty is formed. Right. And he was actually, in December 1776, he's talking about drafting people, and Congress turned that down. But what happened was that...
Well, let's save that for a while.
I know, but I did just that certain regions over the war were drafting people into something that they hadn't won yet. So anyway...
Well, that's usually when you need to draft, when you're not winning.
I know, but it's,
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that. And then we have a little later in the program, we have a little arts clip, a speech from it's not a speech; it's a recording of James Bond author Ian Fleming. So that'll be interesting towards the end of the program. And some good music and lots of other stuff. Let's get started now, though, with today is the big day of the eclipse.
But not in this part of the world, nope. Because it's I don't think we're going to see anything.
Doesn't look like it out there, but it's the eclipse right across North America, starting down in Mexico, in Baja California in Mexico, and right up through the central United States and then across... Canada, starting at the Niagara Peninsula.
Well, yeah, that's sort of a bit east of us.
Yep.
I know.
It's still interesting.
For other people, you know.
Well, apparently the sun, even here we're way off the path of totality. The sun here will be about 20% obscured. Unfortunately, it's a heavy overcast out there. And, you know, even with a 20% reduction in sunlight, I have a feeling you won't really be able to tell much of a difference.
No.
You know, is it just an extra cloud passing over, or is it the moon passing partway in front of the sun? I remember a couple of years ago, or a few years ago, when we had the eclipse that was much closer to here. We didn't have totality here in Vancouver, but it was pretty substantial. And you could definitely... see and feel the difference in the sunlight as it reached its peak. I mean, it got noticeably dimmer out and noticeably cooler, you know, kind of in the same way you get sometimes when you're on a spring day where you're feeling really warm and comfortable in the sunlight, and then the sun, you know, a cloud passes in front of the sun, you raise, oh, right, it's quite chilly out, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to have any of that experience today. Apparently, when things are happening here is about between 10:45 and 11:45 or something like that.
During our show.
Yeah, later in the show, but...
Yeah, and we're here in the basement.
I guess we'll run out at 11 o'clock and see what we can see.
I can't be bothered.
We'll look out and...
What's sort of scary, they say you can go blind if you look at the sun, so I like to kind of just... avoid it. 100% keep my eyesight from more mundane things.
Right. You were telling me about Tintin before the show.
Well, Tintin is this comic book. In fact, in my youth, it was the only one that was in hardcover, you know. And they used to be, now all the libraries have them, but it was kind of a challenge. I'm 61, so I saw them in the early 70s, and then it was hard to get them all.
Yeah.
But Prisoners of the Sun is one of the books.
Yeah. If people aren't familiar with Tintin, it was a story of, it. I think the author is Belgian, so they're...
It's Belgian, that's right.
You know, it originated, he's this Belgian kid who's a young teen, probably.
It's never, but the age of Tintin is never really...
that's what I say, it's sort of that sort of vague middle young person kind of age where it's not quite specific.
Well, it's a fictional entity. So in fictional entities, you can be vague.
You know, you definitely
and
can.
And it can contradict itself and so on.
And but, lots of stories of his adventures in lots of different ways.
Oh, yeah. Actually, they were originally done from 1929 to about... He actually did one 1976. The second to last one is 1966. Mm-hmm. But anyway, The Prisoner of the Sun is that they're in Latin America somewhere. And Captain Haddock, which is... I didn't get that joke until years later. So they're... trapped with these natives, and they're going to be at the stake. And then Tintin looks at this old newspaper clipping while they're in the jail waiting for this. And he said, there's going to be an eclipse of the sun. And so he says, I command the sun to be blocked. And they think they have almighty powers and they don't get burnt. Now, that's a copy of the Mark Twain book Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, about somebody from the 19th century. He gets knocked in the head and he goes back into King Arthur's court, and much the same thing happens. He's about to be burned, but he knows an eclipse is going to happen, so he gets saved. So that's Mark Twain.
Yeah. I think that becomes a bit of a storytelling trope that gets, perhaps Twain sort of originated the sort of concept of, you know, using the knowledge of an eclipse to convince, you know, the less advanced folks who are causing you trouble that you have some sort of special power over the sun. You can make it disappear.
At least with Mark Twain, he's sort of talking about people who are in Britain or Europe as opposed to be doing something a bit politically incorrect.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, Tintin, they're really fun stories, but they were created at a time when people were still excited about colonialism empires and...
Yeah, Tintin in the Congo is sort of not seen as that progressive now.
No.
But actually, if you are a parent, I would start at the Black Island.
Yeah.
And you avoid a lot of the earlier ones. So, I mean, you've got 16 good adventures to read your children.
I'm sure there's a big difference between the ones that were, you said they started in the 20s. So the ones that were sort of published prior to the
1929,
second,
actually.
Yeah, the ones that were published prior to the Second World War and when colonialism and imperialism of the European powers were still going very strong.
Yeah.
And I think broadly supported in Europe versus the post-war period where the whole legitimacy of the project was called into question and eventually, you know.
I think it's just more he's sort of getting away from a certain mentality later on.
Yeah.
He goes, but there when X86 was around, the Belgium Pavilion said they were first to the moon with Tintin in 1958. So that's the other thing. They go to the moon. They have a one about the moon. He goes to the moon and so on. So they're, as I say, avoid if you're a parent encouraging your child to look at it, or just start at the Black Island and proceed from there on.
Yeah. Sadly, the eclipse has been so much in the news that you're not going to be able to exploit it to fool anybody with your special powers over the sun.
No,
today.
Well, no one's going to burn me at the stake otherwise.
Yes, that is also true.
No, you said it's a trope, this little narrative device. What's a third example that
it's something I've seen in like numerous cartoons. You know,
which one?
Well, I don't
see.
Have...
It's only Tintin and Mark Twain.
No, but I mean like the Warner Brothers cartoons. You know, Bugs Bunny and stuff.
There's not one. I know. I've got them all on my jump drive. There's not one Bugs Bunny cartoon that uses this. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I've definitely seen it.
Okay.
In other contexts.
All right.
Coming up next is Climate Connections. We'll come back to that a little later. We're going to go into our segment, our new segment on gardening. It's called Gardening with Embark. Embark is the sustainability organization, the independent student sustainability organization here at SFU. And they do a lot of climate advocacy and sustainability advocacy and food security issues as well. And part of their project, they operate a couple community learning gardens here on the campus. Pablo Vimas is their gardening manager who runs their gardens and their education programs on working in the gardens and gardening to grow your own food. And we're going to be talking to Pablo every week about what's going on in gardens and what you need to be thinking about with your garden at home and how to plan for your garden and sharing a lot of knowledge that's going to be timely to the time of the year and what you'd be facing in your own garden, whether it's in your backyard or at the community garden plot or in containers on your patio. So this is our first segment, a little of an introduction to Pablo and to Embark and some of the issues for right now when we're at the very beginning. As you'll see, not quite the very beginning of the garden season, but the very beginning of the outdoor part of the gardening season. This is Gardening with Embark. All right. Welcome to a new segment we have here on the radio. We're going to talk about gardening, and with us today is Pablo Vimas from Embark. Welcome, Pablo.
Welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Maybe you can tell us, before we get into actually talking about gardening, a little bit about Embark. And yourself.
Yeah. So Embark Sustainability is a nonprofit organization based here in SFU campus in Burnaby. And we work in two main streams. One is food justice, and the other is climate change, climate justice. And part of the food justice, we manage different gardens here in campus. We have two, of which I manage and administer and make sure that those gardens are producing and our plots are rented to anyone that is interested in growing vegetables.
Well, it's springtime and people are starting to think about their gardens and getting things into the ground and what they need to do to prepare for the coming growing season.
That's right.
What are people thinking? What should be people thinking about at this time of year?
Well, at this time of the year, we are on week 14. Week 13 is the last week that we expect a frost here in Vancouver. So week 14, everybody is excited and everyone is outside in the garden seeing what needs to be done. So the main activities that we do in the garden at the moment is cleaning, repairing garden beds that have been broken over the winter, building new ones in case that someone decides to start gardening, bringing fresh soil to the garden, and particularly compost and soil amender, and bringing out all the plants that we have started indoors in the month of February, March.
What plants do you start that early?
For instance, we start all the broccolis, cabbages, cauliflowers, because those plants take around 8 weeks to develop between a seed and a small plant to come out.
Yeah.
So we use all this period of winter to a kickstart of the garden. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people are thinking about those plants for their own garden, is it too late to get started?
No, you can start by seed, but you might be harvesting by mid-summer, which we want to avoid because these crops are cold crops, so they like this cold weather. Otherwise, the plants will start bolting, and they realize, like, hey, this is too hot for me to grow. I better make flowers.
So bolting is when they start growing too fast.
Bolting is when the plant develops flowers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, for instance, a lettuce, we eat the leaves, but when the weather gets too hot, the lettuce says, I'm not going to, my life cycle is over, I'm going to make seeds. Right. Therefore, flowers, and the next step is making seeds.
So starting early is much better for those ones.
Yes, for the broccolis. And then now we are thinking as well, we can start with summer crops such as tomatoes and zucchinis and peppers. Again, those are crops that require a bit of...
So those would be the ones that people should be starting to seed now.
Right now, yes. So we can have them ready to go out in the garden by mid-May.
Right. What's an important consideration when you're trying to seed? Because I've tried to do it at home a little bit with pretty mixed success. Sometimes you put them all in there and then they just nothing happens. And sometimes it does. And maybe I don't know quite what I'm doing, but what are important considerations for that?
If you are there are three things that we need for a seed to germinate. One is water, and the other is temperature, and the oxygen, of course.
Yeah.
So temperature, the soil temperature is very important. At the moment, with these long days that we are having, the soil in the garden is warming up, creating a nice environment for the seed to start waking up and start growing.
So it would be okay to plant them in the garden at this point?
At this point, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we have cold crops like spinach, radishes, that love this weather. So they will just start germinating very well.
You mentioned about cleaning the garden and bringing in soils. What about when people are bringing in soil, what should they be thinking? What kind of soils? And is it too early to fertilize at this point? And
Bringing soil means that we already have soil in the garden, and this soil has been depleted of nutrients from the previous harvest.
Yeah.
So we need to replace those nutrients.
Yeah.
Therefore, we bring well-rotting manure or compost, that if we have a compost in the garden, and that brings some of the nutrients that the plant will need for the next season. So you can buy in bulk, or you can buy in one cubic yard, or you can just go to any garden center and buy small bags of soil. Yeah.
And then do you dig and turn that into the soil? Or do
you just will put on top of the soil, and you just using a trowel, you will just mix the 6 inches of topsoil. You will just mix nice. So, this all gets nice and mixed and well distributed.
Great. So when you're planning your garden for the year, you must have a schedule where, you know, obviously you talked about, you know, starting some plants as far back as February.
Correct.
Can you tell me a bit about the schedule and planning?
Yeah. So planning is one of the things that we gardeners do over the winter. So over the winter, we spend more of our time looking into garden magazines, browsing seed providers, and then we decide what we like to grow. So we start always with cold crops, so all the leafy greens, all the crops that gives us leaves.
Yep.
So ranging from lettuce, arugula, spinach, cabbage, cauliflower. And then for the summer, we have all the produce, all the crops that gives us fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So any crop that gives us a fruit is a summer crop.
Right.
So including pumpkins and zucchinis. Although pumpkins, we harvest them in the fall, but they need to grow and they develop over the summer. And and we have dates. For instance, as I mentioned, here in Vancouver, the last frost is around 28th of March.
Mm-hmm.
And from then, we use a starting point.
Yep.
And from then, we trace back at least 10 weeks back. So it sends us week 5 in January.
Right.
So if you are very eager gardening at the end of January, you are already starting seeds indoor. So you have all lot seeds for early April to plant outdoors.
Right.
And now we are thinking, oh, I need to start planting my seeds indoors so they are ready for May. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, week 13, yep, very important. Week 26 is another very important week because that is the week that elementary and secondary schools finish.
Yeah.
And the garden is really booming with green vegetables. And then we just harvest them and plant our summer crops. And then we have week 36. So it's when the winter, when the summer is over, everybody is coming back to school, and we harvest the last harvest of the fall, of the summer, I'm sorry, and then we start with our fall crops.
Right.
So on week 26 is where we start all the cold crops again, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, to plant in week 36 so we can harvest still in the fall. So, yeah.
It's great. So much to know. So you're going to be back every week, Pablo, to talk, talk about gardens. We'll be back again next week talking about what you should be thinking about then, and we'll be continuing that through the growing season.
Correct.
Thank you so much. Tell me a bit about how people can find a little bit more about Embark and what you guys do.
So Embark can be found on all our in our social media channels at Embark Sustain and YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Great. Pablo Vimes from Embark. We'll be back with Pablo every week. Thank you for coming this week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
Thanks to Pablo. He will be back, as we just said there, every week with an update on what you need to be worrying about with your gardens and how to get the most out of your garden this season. Let's take a quick look at the weather here. As we know, it's cloudy and rainy out there today. And although the totality of the eclipse is very far away on the other side of the continent, you can see, well, the sun will be obscured about 20% here, but I don't think we're going to be able to see any evidence of that today, given all the clouds. Will be temperatures up to 9 degrees today. Gets a little better tomorrow and Wednesday, with some mixed sun and cloud, highs up to 13 degrees. And then kind of more of the same the rest of the week. Rainy on Thursday, bit of a mix of sun and cloud on the weekend, and back to the rain. So pretty typical for this time of year.
Mm, yeah, typical.
Peter.
So it wasn't last week. It was Tuesday. The reason I was sort of talking about the bank holidays that Franklin Roosevelt instigated.
Yeah, last week we talked about
6 days ago.
Yeah. The 1933 bank holiday in the States, where
you couldn't go to the bank.
They closed all the banks across the entire country for an entire week.
Yes.
To try, as part of an overall effort to stabilize the banking system.
Well, so Franklin Roosevelt's idea in 1935 was to put the Eye of Providence on the, which is that all-seeing eye pyramid, on the back of the $1 bill. I'm going over what was his thinking. Now, that symbol actually comes from 1782. And they hadn't signed their last peace treaty with England yet. They signed one kind of a more tenable one in 1782 is what they did, but 1783 was the last one. Mm-hmm. And actually, the Revolutionary War is actually 1775 to 1783, really.
Yeah.
So 1776 is sort of a bit propagandist because that was the Declaration of Independence. It wasn't that they had won or established a country yet.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's interesting, and I, you know, trying to get a more other look at this, I was really surprised that. Okay, so here's basically what happened. In December 1776, there was some success, I guess they had. And George Washington, who didn't become president until 1889, by the way, quite a bit after it, he wanted people to be drafted in a war that hadn't yet been totally won. He wants to instigate a draft. Congress turned him down. Congress turned him down. But interestingly enough, throughout the Revolutionary War, certain areas of the 13 colonies chose to induct people. And who knows? I mean, this thing could have won or not won. And they're saying, you're drafted already.
Yeah.
The statement that George Washington said, and this is a direct thing I copied down here. And so George Washington says in December 1776, unhappy that Congress turned him down, he said, every citizen who enjoys the protection of a free government owes not only a portion of his property, but even his personal service to the defense of it. And I think this is a bit early to be demanding that. I mean, it's sort of Orwellian, because one thing in George Orwell, which came out in 1949, and it's about 1984, of course, supposedly, is that like what the system is saying, freedom is slavery. And so he's sort of saying the same thing. Oh, you guys are free, so we have to enslave you for a little bit. In this thing, we don't know who's going to win. But anyway, so he himself, and I have, I took a few books out from the library, looked at them, and there were two books I didn't lug around today that sort of said, oh, this is another different way of looking at the revolution. I didn't think it really was. Mm-hmm. This is one.
What's it called?
It's called Running from Bondage.
Yep.
Enslaved Women and Their Remarkable Fight for Freedom in Revolutionary America. And in this book, they describe how George Washington treated his slaves. He had a tobacco farm, and he demanded them to work sunrise to sundown. I mean, he could have been a bit nice, 8-hour day maybe, I don't know, but no. So he wasn't, I kind of think he's kind of a scary guy, I think, own opinion. Now, Magnus, do you have some other?
Well, I was just going to, I've heard a bit about George Washington, and apparently, his attitudes about slavery changed throughout the period of his life.
Where did you hear this one?
It was on a program we watched recently here at the station. We do sort of a regular thing, looking at issues, and so seeing some documentaries, and apparently, about different issues, and one, a lot of them relate to, race and identity issues and all those kind of things. So sometimes you get some of this back history. And apparently, George Washington, his views on slavery changed a lot over the course of his lifetime, particularly as he got older. And so eventually he came to believe that slavery wasn't a good system and wasn't really acceptable, except the problem. Part of the problem gets to be the point that, despite these views that he'd come to no longer view slavery as legitimate, he didn't free his own slaves until his own death.
Yes, that's right.
And in fact, it wasn't actually quite then. They were to be freed upon the death of his wife.
So
it's like he had his views had changed, but he wasn't prepared to deal with any inconvenience of these views, such as freeing all his slaves and, the economic impact that would have had on his personal life and wealth and status and economic, and in fact, because of the way inheritance laws worked, a number of them didn't actually get freed until past his wife's death through the life of his children, just because they got passed on to his wife, and then the inheritance law, they got passed on to the kids, and even though they were supposed to be, so yes, his views on slavery changed, but they didn't They didn't change enough for him to give up his slaves, at least during his lifetime.
Well, why are you hedging your bets on this issue, Magnus? Like, where are you coming from?
I'm not hedging my bets. I'm just saying that it's an interesting – I mean, I think what's interesting about